interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, August 21 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live and back at Twin Peaks on Johnston. Enjoying the eats, drinks, and scenic views while broadcasting on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love at Twin Peaks, the famous Clint D in tow. For the next 2 hours, from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, bold but probably an accurate statement by Grant Delpit late yesterday. I'm going to lead off with that and how it got me to thinking. The new number seven, he'll do that to you sometimes. I'm going to launch right into that. We've got some great guests today on the 15s. I'll tell you all about it. We'll get to the Saints and Cajuns as more, but I want to lead off with what Delpit had to say, and again, some of the extensions throughout LSU's football team. You want to jump in? We're moving fast today. Get in with us. 706-0111. Quote, unquote, Grant Delpit, this is the best secondary in the country, no doubt. And it's interesting, because just yesterday, we had Bob Redmond, Hollywood Bob, came aboard from Gainesville, Florida. And Bob said, with respect to LSU's guys, it's hard for me to imagine a better corner tandem in the country than what the Gators are bringing to the table and what they're going to showcase Saturday against Miami down in Orlando. Okay, that's two defensive backs. LSU's four, again, not having done the complete legwork. All I've done is rifle through every copy I could find of Athlon's and Lindy's, and you get the picture. But preseason, is there anybody than the four LSU is going to put out there? There could be debates. Perhaps Florida's up there, maybe a few others. But here's where there may be underestimation. Derek Stingley Jr. And how do you accurately forecast just how good a true freshman can be? Now, we've seen it, right? We've seen it, frankly, at the quarterback position lately, much less running back, wide receiver, cornerback, where if you're a freak, you can get in and go. And Stingley is that. And so when you combine Stingley with Fulton, boy, they're good there. Really good. When you take a peek in the back, Delpit has a chance to be the best defender in the country, not just defensive back, not just safety. And then there's one of the most underrated players on LSU's team, and that's Todd Harris. They've got guys in the secondary like Jacoby Stevens, like the new kid on the block from Texas, Marcel Brooks, that keeps blowing minds so far in August. But I absolutely would not sleep on Todd Harris if I were you. I'm just saying. And so all told, Delpit said it's the best secondary in the country, no doubt. One thing I will tell you, because here's how it got me thinking. What are the best units on LSU's team heading into this 2019 season? Tigers are getting back onto the Ponderosa as we speak. I'll have a practice report for you at 5:15. But right now, without the benefit of more knowledge, right, your latest updates, I thought this would be fun. Delpit says it's the best secondary in the country. I will tell you, I think it's the best unit on LSU's team, but I think it's closer than many. And you've heard me say maybe, if you've listened to the show for the last month, month and a half, I am very big on LSU's linebacking core this year. I was saying it before they put four guys on whatever the hell you call the watch list. I guess it's the Butkus Award, right? The thing that Devin White just won. Four LSU linebackers, Butkus Award watch list players. Two of them are competing for a starting job, we've learned since. Jacoby Stevens comes down and takes some of their cookies. More and more, it looks like Michael Divinity is moving from the outside to the inside, taking some more cookies there. But think about it. Between Divinity and the return of Chase on the outside, the guys competing on the inside next to Divinity, you know I love Jacob Phillips and what he brings to the table. I mean, 80-plus tackles last year, playing second fiddle to White. Then you throw in some of the other hard hitters who are fighting for time. Haven't even mentioned Damone Clark. I'm going to tell you that I think linebacker is the second best position grouping on this LSU team. And I'm not sure the gap is that wide between one and two. So let me go down the list. 1 through 7 for you. Agree, disagree, have your own thoughts. Weigh in at 706-0111. DB, top position grouping on the team. Linebacker, a fairly close second. Quarterback, not far behind at third. And what's interesting and what's encouraging, it's not just an individual player, right? I said position group. And after a dominant performance in a second scrimmage, got to give a nod to Miles Brennan. Not as a guy who merits playing time with the first team, but if things break down, you know how it goes, right? In case of emergency, break glass. Well, if you have to break the glass, I don't think there will be as much fear and trepidation turning it over to Miles Brennan this year in a pinch. So give me quarterback as the third best position grouping on LSU's team. Wide receiver will be 4 for me. Question mark last year, maybe the biggest on the team. Now it's a position where Justin Jefferson is coming into a third year of production, and Jefferson himself has said, not going to be easy, and I wouldn't bet on me this year to dominate the touches and the catches because of how much they can spread the wealth. I continue to be in the boat that Ja'Marr Chase is about to explode in 2019, and I mean explode. He's a red zone threat. He's a possession receiver. I think he's going to be one of the best to put in this LSU uni since Odell and Jarvis left town. And that's understanding that DJ Chark was a second-round pick here recently. A lot of faith in what Ja'Marr Chase brings to the table. Terrace Marshall, Racy McMath, some of the big boys, they'll have a chance. The underneath guys have me excited, though. Derek Dillon's had a lot of opportunity. Jontre Kirkland's a freak athlete. Second-year player out of Lutcher. Then there's the kid everyone's talking about in fall camp, Trey Palmer. So give me wide receiver as the fourth best position grouping on the team. 5 and 6 are razor thin for me. D-line, RB. I'll take it in that order. And isn't it interesting that you can bring back Fehoko and Lawrence, two of the biggest January question marks. Will they stay? Will they go? They stay, and yet still, I'll tell you that I think this is the fifth best position grouping on the team because there are question marks inside. The camp MVP may well be Tyler Shelvin, one of the best freshmen on the team. Might also well be Apu Aika, but that's still a bit of a question mark. Give me running back for 6, and a lot of people think that's one of the strengths of the team. So, again, I think we're showcasing some things with this list that I'm putting forth. There aren't a lot of weaknesses, but number 7 might just be that. Might be. Offensive line. Depth takes a hit, obviously, with Cardell Thomas getting injured. I think there are some questions. I mean, Ed Ingram never really welcomed back into the fold with all of his off-the-field issues. Some other offensive guard problems with injuries so far in August. Don't know how serious they are. Chasen Hines has returned. Damian Lewis, not so much. I think that James Craig is going to have to earn the comp car this season because offensive line, to me, would be 7th of 7 when ranking these position groups. But a lot of those that were listed 4 through 6, I don't know that I would call them weaknesses, maybe just lesser strengths. And that's how we're going to bring you in to the program today. All right, on the other side of this break, psyched up to bring you Ryan Terrio, the Riot, former LSU. The guy laced him up with a bunch of really good teams in the National League. We'll be primarily MLB-oriented with Ryan Terrio in about 3 or 4 minutes. And at 5:15, stepping out of the Ponderosa and joining us, Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser. 2 hours today, ready to max it out. Live from Twin Peaks on Johnston, and then it's RP3's draft at 7 o'clock. So stick and stay. More Bumper to Bumper Sports on the way on 103.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And right back out to the home of the eats, drinks, and the scenic views. We're at Twin Peaks on Johnston, ready to talk some pro baseball. Aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, former national champion for LSU. Our guy won a couple of World Series as well in Major League Baseball play. Ryan Theriault is with us. How are you, Ryan?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Hey, life is good on this side of the basin. Tell me this, as we leap right into the Astros, we carry Houston Astros baseball on our station, Ryan. What has been your biggest takeaway of the career that so far Alex Bregman has put on paper? Obviously impressive, but anything that maybe has surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, the power numbers definitely surprised me. You know, you look at what Alex did here at LSU, and homers weren't the one thing that would stand out. But, you know, it's just amazing to see, and I say it all the time with young hitters, power is truly the last thing to develop in great hitters. And when I say great hitters, you know, generational-type hitters, you know, Barry Bonds-type guys, I mean, they were great hitters before they were great power hitters. And you're seeing that happen with Alex. I want to say he's at 30, maybe 31 right now, whatever it is. You know, could realistically get to 40. And if you had told me that he was a 40 home run guy when he was at LSU, man, I'd have called you a liar all day. So that definitely shocked me.
I will stay in the American League, then get to some of the groups that you played for. The Yankees this year, just the way that their team is built, does it remind you of some of the groups that you played against, or are they doing this in a different way?
Man, the Yankees have definitely made some great offseason moves, I think. You didn't see – it's different, right? You don't see them, other than Stanton, going to get the Bryce Harpers or the Mike Trouts of the world, or the Madison Bumgarners, you know, guys that have been rumored and free agents recently. You know, they've built this thing with Torres and you know, and so – you know, other than Stanton, really, man, and a couple others sprinkled in there, it's a little bit different as far as that goes. But man, the play on the field's similar. It's the same dominant approach to the game. I'll tell you, the stadium's a tough one to play at. That city's a challenge for opposing teams to go into and play at. So they've got all that worked in their favor and in the history. I mean, you put on those pinstripes, you know, you're just expected to win. It's like when you put on a, you know, Patriots uniform, you're expected to win football games. So that's what you're seeing in New York.
Talking Major League Baseball with Ryan Theriault on 103.7 The Game. All right, handicap the top of the NL Central for me right now. The Cards a half game ahead of the Cubs. You know, yeah, both of those franchises well. How do you see it?
Man, I feel like the Cubbies are probably going to pull it out. I'd love to see St. Louis get back on top, just because that city loves its baseball. And you know, a couple friends of mine, you know, on that team that I still talk to quite a bit. And but Chicago's just got so much firepower, man. I mean, offensively, top to bottom, this is a team that can hurt you at any moment, no matter who's at bat. And look, don't sleep on Milwaukee either. I mean, this is a good division. This is a good division that really you'll see at the end of the season. You know, September is always a fun month for everybody. You're seeing these playoff races, but Milwaukee's one too, man, that could sneak in there and make some noise.
We'll stay in the National League and we'll get to your San Francisco Giants. I'll get your reaction on the swan song season right now for Bruce Bochy.
Yeah, man, look, I don't know if I've said it on this show, but I go on in San Francisco quite a bit. You know, Boch and I have a really good relationship, Brandon Crawford, you know, and then Bohm and all the guys. So you're pulling so hard for him. You want him to go out on top. Such a roller coaster. Early on, you know, it's, are we going to blow this thing up and start over? Hats off to the front office for giving him a shot to make a run at it. You know, leading out of the All-Star break, it wasn't the start that they had hoped for, you know, and so then the questions arise again, man, we should have traded Bohm, maybe should have moved Buster or Brandon Crawford, but, you know, you just hope that, you hope that it can be a fun, you know, last 40 days of a guy's managerial career, a Hall of Fame manager, and I was very fortunate to play for Boch and get to know him personally, play against him for a long time as well. And he's truly one of the good guys and does it for the right reasons. His players love him. But more importantly, when he walks in a room, like everybody listens and turns around, you know, he kind of commands that respect. And And so, man, I'm always pulling for Boach, and I really enjoyed my time in San Fran.
A few league-wide questions for you as we come down the stretch with Ryan Theriault, former LSU baseball player on 103.7 The Game. We carry Astros baseball. I mentioned that. And so I can't help but notice when Justin Verlander, just about any opportunity he gets, is knocking the juice baseballs. Is that something that pitchers are always going to do, man, or where does that come from?
No, I mean, something's definitely going on. You know, it's not just the balls, though, but the balls are different, and I can tell you that with certainty. The balls are different. The specs on the balls are a little bit different. The bats have gotten better, you know, from a production standpoint. You know, but I'll tell you the issue, and more than the baseballs, pitchers don't pitch anymore. You know, they and it starts at the youth level, high school, and then in college. You see it in college all the time, man. If you don't throw 95, you're not getting recruited to a high end school. All guys are worried about is lighting the gun up. And I can remember, you know, vividly facing guys in minor leagues that were touching triple digits that never sniffed the major leagues because they couldn't locate or they just got hit. You know, nowadays, if you throw 100, you're in the big leagues immediately. And I'm not saying it's easier to hit today than it was, you know, 15 years ago, but you don't have to game plan. You don't have to worry about a sinker. You don't have to worry about a cutter other than a couple guys. And the hard slider is not as prevalent. I can remember sitting in hitters meetings going, you know, okay, pitcher Greg Maddux, for instance, okay, he might cut a fastball, he might throw a sinker, he could throw a splitty, maybe a changeup. Overhand curveball is good, and his slider is good. So now if I'm a hitter, I have to prepare for every one of those pitches. In 2019, man, it's like two or three pitches tops that the hitters have to prepare for. So, of course, they can take more chances. And, of course, strikeouts are going to go up. And, of course, homers are going to go up because it's more of an aggressive approach to hitting because the hitters don't have to prepare for it. You know, it's fastball, good fastball at 98, and a breaking ball. Well, if I guess right, that ball is going to go a long way.
Love the perspective. So, Ryan, you mentioned the bats. Would I be exaggerating it to say that Marucci – has changed the game with the influx of Marucci bats in the league?
Yeah, I mean, look, and they do such a good job. Like, they're balanced well. The technology has gotten better in the production of these bats. Yeah, Kurt and the guys, absolutely. I mean, they're the biggest in professional baseball. You know, they service their guys great, and you're just seeing them better. You know, used to be, and I'm saying it again, I'm not the, like, back-in-my-day guy, trust me. But it used to be you'd get a dozen bats, and maybe three of them you could use in the game just because they didn't feel right or one was a little bit too heavy or whatever. Like, now every bat you get's perfect. And so, yeah, man, I think technology's made that side of the game better as well.
Yeah, your day wasn't that long ago. I'll get you out of here with this one, though, Ryan. I wanted to ask you about this, too. How much do you remember there being the shift when you were playing? And then your thoughts on the evolution of that since?
Yeah, I mean, I played for Tony La Russa, you know, in St. Louis. And I'd say he kind of started it, but he was definitely at the front end of that. You know, and the shift would be on guys that we thought were trying to get the head out and yank the baseball and hit the ball over the fence. You know, now I think because everybody's trying to do that, you're seeing more shifts. But also the pitchers are pitching into the shift, right? So I don't see it being too long until hitters kind of get smart, you know, and the stolen base is a little bit more prevalent, you know, and double plays happen where you never see them anymore, you know, because the shift is on. But you know, history repeats itself, man. Nolan Ryan threw 100-something miles an hour. So did Bob Gibson. You know, and then you see guys, Tom Glavins of the world come in, and Greg Maddux I mentioned earlier, but dudes that could actually pitch. And then it cycles through again, and guys are throwing super hard in the shift and all that. I truly believe that everything will cycle back around. You know, and the shift won't happen quite as much because hitters are just going to get better. Because all it's going to take is one guy or two guys that can handle the bat and they're going to hit 400 because they'll hit through the shift or they'll manipulate the barrel a little bit and be able to push the ball to a certain side of the field. It's not super difficult to do. Good Lord, if Tony Gwynn was playing today, he'd hit 450.
I know it's football season, but I got to tell you, this has been a lot of fun. Great talking some shop with you. Ryan, thanks for stopping by today.
Hey, no problem, man. Appreciate you having me.
That's Ryan Theriault. Tony Gwynn would hit 450. I don't think anybody here would take that bet either. There's no doubt about it. It's funny he mentioned that name. I'll say this on our way out of our second segment. I spent a couple of days at the end of this year in San Diego for a really good friend's wedding. And this friend of mine, he was marrying a young lady who was related to Tony Gwynn. And, man, the late, great Tony Gwynn just revered, as you would imagine, down in San Diego. But the stories that they tell about that guy and his dedication to the game, and nobody maybe saw the baseball better, certainly in his generation, pretty cool stuff. But absolutely revered down there. Hitting 450 today? Yeah, why not? Go figure the OBP or the OPS on that, why don't you? We're halfway through our 4 o'clock hour. When we return, I led off with LSU football. I've got a few questions for you related to the purple and gold. One on Joe Burrow and one with the other big position in LSU's offensive backfield. So stay with us. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back into Twin Peaks on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Clint, I'm not going to lie. There's a tweet that must be shared. I've done my best to stay away from this whole Popeye's Chick-fil-A thing. It's low-hanging fruit. I could have brought it to the show, could have made it the sink or swim question, and I think you and I know we would have a preponderance, to use a $14 word, of calls, messages, and all that. And in fact, I think you've kind of been waiting on it. I think I can read you after 4.5 years. I think you've been waiting on that, Clint.
I've been kind of waiting on it. I definitely have something planned for that on Saturday. I'm not going to give the whole kit and caboodle away, but just listen in on Saturday. You'll hear my takes on it.
Okay, so I won't take that low-hanging fruit, but you'll kick Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. There's no problem. There's no problem for you there. So here's what I will say, and this is pretty good stuff. I'll give the credit here at Kyle Digby on Twitter. Again, I'm not putting my neck out there and choosing a side yet, not because I'm not afraid to, but just not going there, trying to keep it as much on sports as I can. But this was too good to pass up. At Kyle Digby on Twitter. When Anthony Bourdain was filming in Lafayette, he ate at the Popeyes buffet every day for 3 days in a row. The man has eaten literally everything there is to eat on Earth, and he was mainlining that bleep like he knew he only had a few months to live. He would have loved this sandwich. My favorite part about all this isn't anything to do with the food from Chick-fil-A or Popeyes. My favorite part is how passionate people are getting about their favorite food chain right now. And if you're a Chick-fil-A person, you're pounding the service, gavel as hard as you can right now. If you are a Popeyes dude or lady to start, you are all over on that train right now. But bringing up Anthony Bourdain and some of the details that came out about him crushing Popeyes, calling it the perfect slice of Americana, I think it was a New York Times story, that's straight up genius right there. And it's very few things of that matter, Clint, that will divert my attention from one of the best baseball interviews we've ever had on this show a few minutes ago with Ryan Theriault and an LSU football preseason topic. But that tweet just got me right where it needed to.
And it kind of did for me as well. It's definitely probably one of the strongest takes I've seen or heard about the Popeyes versus Chick-fil-A debate.
Mainlining that bleep like he knew he only had a few months to live. Just a wordsmith right there. So, real. Must always recognize real. That's part of the duty of anyone who is real. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the LSU football conversation. And I always have usually I have a couple of things for you. We call it a twofer, right? When we go shade in the 5 o'clock hour. I've got a twofer today. Not one, but two questions. I'll get to it right after the music.
exciting and new.
Earlier in the program, I gave you my position rankings for LSU football, my position group rankings. And I told you I thought it was DB, linebacker, quarterback, receivers, D-line, running back, O-line. That's 1 through 7. Let's go a little deeper on two of those positions here. Your first sink or swim question of the day. Does Joe Burrow throw for 3,000 yards this regular season? 12 games. Does he get to 3,000 yards? I'll provide some context in my answer. Sink or swim part two. Who will LSU's leading rusher be? Open-ended. Just give me a name. And Clint, again, like I said, I know you at this point. I know you're thinking this feels like a Football Friday question, a series of over-unders on LSU football. Boy, we're getting awfully close to those questions, and that's a good feeling. And I'm so excited that I'm going to jump and cut right in front of you in line. I'm going to go first here, but we're going to take listener calls as well. 706-0111. As for the first question, does Burrow throw for 3,000 yards? I'm going to swim, but I think it's going to be razor thin. You do need some context, though. Burrow last year threw for 2,894 yards. Here's the thing. 394 of those were in the bowl game. So if we're going apples to apples, Cat threw for 2,500 yards in the regular season. Can he up it by 500? Can he average 250 yards a game this regular season? And I think that he can. There are some layup games on LSU's schedule. So maybe a bit like Tua Tagovailoa last year. Does he get to play enough fourth quarters to rack up some of the numbers, pinball style, against some of the lesser than opponents on LSU's schedule? Maybe not. But I think he can average more than 250. And I think there will be that much of a commitment to the passing game this year. That many receivers that are reliable this year. So I think it's going to be close, but I'll swim with a bit of caution here, Clint. Let me go to part two. This one's tough. Who will LSU's leading rusher be? Odds on favorite in the clubhouse there would have to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The most veteran back that they've got, Leonard Fournette. I like his chances of catching a good bit of balls out of the backfield. Leading him in rushing, no chance. Then there's beast mode, baby beast mode. Chris Curry. Do not forget about him in the context of this year's offense, but I don't think he'll be the leading rusher either. Love the freshman as well. John Emery, Ty Davis Price. I think it's a two-man race in my book. Clyde Edwards-Helaire or John Emery. I could see Emery leading the team in rushing maybe the final four games of the season. He could be their November leader in rushing, right? He may come down the stretch strong and take over a lot of the carries for number 22, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But for a whole regular season's body of work, I'm going to lean on the odds on favorite here. I'm going to go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and maybe even by a nose, but I think John Emery is going to come on very strong as the season progresses. So there are my picks. Swimming with caution on Burrow over 3K, and give me Edwards-Helaire in a close heat. What say you?
I'm going swim, and I'm swimming with a lot of confidence when it comes to the Joe Burrow question. Ben, it's largely because you brought it up perfectly. You've got a little bit of a lighter schedule. It's not as tough as last year. I feel like in my mind, like you look at just some of the matchups they have, namely you got Northwestern State, you've got Utah State, you've got obviously a cellar dweller in the SEC in Vanderbilt, and obviously Arkansas towards the end of the year. I think you've got plenty of chances to see Joe Burrow be out there for the entire four quarters of a ball game, and you don't have to worry about him kind of having that slump like he did, I feel like, towards the middle of the season, namely around that Mississippi State game until the UCF performance. So I think he winds up getting to 3,000 yards with relative ease. And with the second question, I'm going to stick with what you went as well. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, largely because he'll be wind up being the bell cow for this team for the good chunk of the season. Whenever you have guys like John Emery and Tyron Davis, all these guys are going to wind up getting a lot of run. But I feel like you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he'll wind up being the bell cow for this team, at least for a good chunk of the season.
Here we are, Clint, answering sink or swim questions, and I think you managed to fit in some really nice subliminal shade. Don't think I didn't notice, pardon the double negative, what you did there to Arkansas. Wow.
Yeah.
You threw in every crappy non-conference team, all due respect to Utah State. You threw in LSU's trip to Music City to to play Vanderbilt, and then you threw in Arkansas. So take Chad Morris off the Christmas card list for you this year, an SEC West opponent, and you treated them like they're just a little redheaded stepchild, right? A little sister of the poor. What's up with that?
Oh, in the words of the Big Lebowski, am I wrong? Am I wrong on that statement there? I feel like Arkansas is not going to wind up giving you a whole lot of run in that one.
A battle for the boot, and Clint just thinks that it needs to go by the wayside. So I get it. Virg Osborne and Company found a way to kick it off the schedule in terms of the final Thanksgiving week game. So they knew it wasn't marquee enough to be there, but Clint's saying, nope, no need to worry about Arkansas. It's not even a thing. Here's what we'll do. Let's take our final break of the hour. When we return, I do want to get some of your input here. Does Burrow hit 3K in passing yardage for the regular season? And who's your pick to click for LSU's leading rusher in the backfield? Call us up. Let us know. We'll put you in the queue. 706-0111. Otherwise, we'll get to a little New Orleans Saints football. We are Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we'll be right back in to Twin Peaks on Johnston. Enjoying the eats, the drinks, and the scenic views on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in with more of the good stuff. We'll open back up our sink or swim question for anybody who wants to take a dive in. Will Joe Burrow throw for 3,000 yards this regular season? And who will be LSU's leading rusher? While we wait on that, there's something that for me was too good not to share. Clint, we often kind of joke about, you know, Joe's off the street, right, that say, I could make a 40-yard field goal. How is my favorite team's kicker missing? I could go out there and do this. Now, there needs to be a very important caveat thrown into this conversation. When dudes, or, as is the case in Philadelphia recently, ladies, when they go out there and try their leg at this, they're not doing it with a pass rush, right, a field goal block unit that's coming after them. Right, they're not dealing a lot of times with weather conditions, rain, wind, sleet, snow. Don't have to contend with bad timing on the snap, the hold, and all these things. All right, disclaimer done. But this is interesting. The Philadelphia Eagles allowed diehard Eagles fan and world champion soccer star Carly Lloyd to come out yesterday and visit Philly camp. Now, look, it shouldn't surprise anybody that a world-class soccer player, and Lloyd, if I'm not mistaken, has competed in at least three World Cups. I know she's a two-time World Cup champion, two-time FIFA Player of the Year, but this is pretty impressive. She's 37 years old. They brought her out to Eagles camp yesterday, and she was just, time after time, flawlessly splitting the uprights on 40-yard field goals. Now, again, it also should be stated she wasn't wearing pads and a helmet. But just, I mean, cranking 40-yarders through like it was her job. Room to spare. Now, the team said, and there's not video of this, but why would they lie about it? The Philadelphia Eagles went on to say, Clint, that Carly Lloyd nailed a 55-yard field goal yesterday at Eagles camp. So, obviously, there are all kinds of people that are making jokes about Jake Elliott, if maybe he falters this year for the Eagles, that they could have a backup. I get it. Those are jokes, I think. And we say them in jest. But does that surprise you at all? I wanted to interject that into the conversation today. We had a little time here. Carly Lloyd, true from 55 yards. That's kind of impressive to me.
That is impressive for me as well. I mean, you definitely have to say, like, kicking it from 50 yards, and you're not necessarily used to doing it in the aspect of a football as opposed to a soccer ball, and you're kicking it into a goal. I feel like that's just impressive in and of itself to see her wind up being able to do it not only with a soccer ball and be able to really be one of the best in the world at it, but then wind up doing that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying with the how should I describe a football? The oblongness of the football,
yeah,
right? As compared to the
right.
I get it. Sure, yeah, I'll throw that word in there. As opposed to the circular soccer ball, but I got to be honest, man. It's just the straight-up leg strength to me. I mean, to me, that's the most impressive thing. The 55 yards. Yikes. So, guys, there are no more excuses. Carly Lloyd at 37 is out there just hammering home 55-yarders in training camp. All right, we've got the sink or swim questions that are open for you on LSU football. While we've got a moment or two, we'll get to a few clips from Saints training camp as well. We always do our best to bring you the latest from Sean Payton. And here, he was asked a question earlier today that I've been asking our guest all week long. How long is Drew Brees going to play in the game this weekend at the New York Jets?
I think our approach with him maybe has changed a little bit over the years. So, you know, you're getting a lot of live looks in practice. But I think, you know, in a game like this, we'll plan on playing him. How much, we'll see. But I think it's important for everyone else around him, too.
We'll stay at the quarterback position. And this guy has probably been the most discussed player on the Saints team, at least on this show, for training camp due to what his role is going to be this year and maybe his future with the team. Of course, I'm talking about Taysom Hill. And here, Sean Payton addresses the passing element and how that's coming along in Hill's game.
You know, of course, we've had him before here. I think that he's doing well, but he didn't get as many snaps in the pass game that we would have hoped. So I think this week we'll have a chance to see more of him.
All right, we'll take a brief departure from our sound bites. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. James, thank you for the call. What's on your mind today?
Oh, not much. Listen, real quick, you mentioned the Carly Lloyd field goal. There is a video of it. Just do a quick Google search. Carly Lloyd kicks 55-yard field goal, and a couple of clips will come up of that. I saw it, and that is very impressive. And it's in the you know how the practice field goals where it's not as wide as the actual in-game field goals?
Right.
She kicked it through one of those, the practice
yes,
one, where
does.
It's much smaller
That's
window for you to get it
very,
through.
Very impressive. And, James, I'll tell you this. I had seen some videos of her from 40, 42. I hadn't seen anything of the 55-yard variety, so I'm glad you mentioned that. I will go catch it in the break.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just amazed at all. You've had so many negative comments about her doing that. It's like these couch potato trolls can't appreciate the fact that this lady did this.
Unbelievable. And James, thanks for the call. I got to be honest, I confused it there for a second, Clint. I read it wrong. I thought he was saying that I was perpetrating negative comments about Carly Lloyd. I'm like, dude, I mentioned it because it was awesome. I finally followed him down his path there. Yeah, he's talking about all the people that are working out their Twitter fingers, right, and their Twitter muscles. I don't know how you could have sexist or maligning comments from any human being booting 55-yard field goals. Frankly, if you were to put a mule and that mule were to back kick a 55-yard field goal, I'd still be damn impressed with that as well. So, yeah, I finally understood James and where he was coming from, and I will be checking out the video of her going boom from 55 yards. All right, Clint, before we run out of real estate, a few more from Saints training camp. And this is something that will follow up on a really sad story from the weekend. We know about the passing of a former governor and a huge proponent of the Acadiana area, a USL grad as well, Kathleen Blanco. And here Sean Payton reflects on Blanco and her impact on the Saints and in Louisiana.
I got here in 06, and she was our governor at that time, and it was very instrumental in all the things that had to take place relative to the recovery. The last time she was here, not too long ago, was to go into the Saints Hall of Fame, and it was great that they were able to honor her prior to her passing.
Clint, just checking here, just checking. Any chance that you caught what he said there and a familiar phrase on the program?
Relative to, if I'm not mistaken. Everybody's favorite phrase.
That's not his favorite phrase. He went right to the Billy Napier, though, like a magnet. He found that relative to. We'll take one more call, then we'll get to our final word of the hour. Waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, we gave a couple of sink or swim questions. You want to dabble?
Yeah, well, we always talked about it. Joe Burrow is going to do as well as the running game goes. I think Clyde is going to be the workhorse for them. And as far the kicking field goals and whatnot, if Jackie Joyner Kersee had a football in front of her, she could kick it out of the stadium.
All right. There we go. Now we got another candidate to come up and replace some of these crappy kickers on our favorite college and pro football teams.
Hey, that was too easy, man.
Like stealing, you might even say. It was pretty darn easy, Frank. How about that for a first hour of the program? A tremendous interview with the guy who scored the winning run in LSU's, 2000? College World Series National Championship. Went on to win World Series with the Cardinals, with the Giants. Ryan Terrio was dynamite on the program, not just current Major League Baseball teams, but the current state of the game, the juice baseball, the shift, Marucci bats, how they're changing the game. That was a lot of fun. We've talked some LSU football, had some LSU questions, and of course, we're going to fit in some commentary on maybe the best tweet I've seen so far about the Chick-fil-A Popeye's eternal struggle, and then the Carly Lloyd story. Not bad for 1 hour. And only one way we can wrap it up, we'll do that with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Codependent. I decided to change my word a little bit here. The running game and Joe Burrow's success, the passing game and what the running game does for it. Look, it's symbiotic, right? They go back and forth. One leeches off the other. One enables the other. But Frank brought it up, so I changed my thoughts on the final word today. He said that Burrow will go as the running game allows him to. It might be the other way around, at least in my mind. The more the passing game succeeds, especially early in games and on early downs, the running game, I think, will follow. It's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.